Now it's time to go back to Ben and Dave, who have bowed to a higher authority when it comes to telescopes, not doing so well with their makeshift one then, and decided to visit Cambridge University's astronomy department.
Welcome back to today's Stargazing Kitchen Science, where earlier on Dave asked you to try and find a couple of different strength magnifying glasses and try and use them to act as a telescope. Now, we've been playing with it for a little while, and in fact, we've come to see a real telescope. Now, Dave, the telescope behind you is 20 foot tall, and it looks quite impressive. Yours, just about, let me see, a street lamp about 5 metres away, and it was upside down. But how does it work?
Okay, something we've done on Kitchen Science before is using a lens to produce an image. So if we take the first magnifying glass and we hold it next to this white wall...
Oh, I see. As you move it about, I can see basically what looks like a perfect picture of the strip light on the other side of the room.
Yeah, that's right. So the light is being taken from the strip light over there. It's being focused by this magnifying glass to form an image over here. If I take this away from the wall, that image still exists. I can actually project it on my hand.
I see. So the image is always there, about, in this case, 6 or 7 inches away from the magnifying glass. Even though we can't see it, the light is still being concentrated on that point. But what does this have to do with telescopes?
We could put a piece of greaseproof paper at that image and then use this second magnifying glass to magnify it and get a picture.
So we'd actually be looking at a magnified image of the image.
Yeah, that's right. However, actually, it works without the piece of greaseproof paper because the light's spreading out just as it would do at a real object. And so you can get a magnified image using the second magnifying glass.
So as long as the two magnifying glasses are the right distance apart, then we can use the first one to make an image of whatever we're looking at and the second one to magnify that image and make it look bigger. But why was it upside down?
Well, if you actually look at the original image, it's kind of hard to see with this strip light because it's horizontal, but that image is actually upside down. Because any light ray which starts off high up comes down, passes through the centre of the magnifying glass and ends up low down, and vice versa, so the image is upside down. So when you magnify the upside down image, everything's upside down.
Okay, so it's upside down, but it did work quite well as a telescope. How could we have made it better?
Well, there's a couple of obvious things you could do to this telescope. One thing is it's really hard to hold it, so you want some way of holding the two lenses, so if you could mount them some way, so you can adjust it gently to get the focus right. The other thing you could do is put the two lenses in a tube to block out the light coming in from the sides, so you don't get stray light getting in and reducing the contrast of your image. But seeing as we're at the Institute of Astronomy here in Cambridge, I've invited Carolyn Crawford along here, who should know a lot more about this than me.
So, Carolyn, Dave obviously has a very simple telescope, but is this really what the first telescopes were like?
It's actually a very good example of what first telescopes were like, and it's got the principal components you need. The first magnifying glass that Dave's got is the larger one, and that's the one that collects all the light from things that are very faint and makes them brighter. And then the second magnifying glass is exactly what you need just to make that image bigger so you can see it. So those are the principal components of any telescope we still use today.
And does that include this enormous thing behind us, which I'm assuming is much, much more powerful?
Yes, it is. The one we've got behind us is still quite old. It dates from 1838, but it's the same principle as Dave was demonstrating with his telescope. The first lens, instead of being a handheld magnifying lens, is actually one that's 12 inches in diameter. So you can imagine that can collect an awful lot more photons from a distant source. But the catch is, to collect that and bring it down to a focus, you need a tube that's just short of 20 foot long. And at the other end, we have what we call the eyepiece, but really that's just a glorified magnifier, like Dave's second magnifying glass. And we can change that around and get different sort of magnifying strengths according to whether we're looking for something that's small and star-like or large and fuzzy, if you want different magnifications for different kind of objects. But the basic principle is very much the same.
And how have telescopes moved on since these basic principles?
Well, the kind of telescope we're demonstrating here is just one kind of telescope called a refractor. Most of the large telescopes today are reflecting telescopes. And this idea was first brought about by our own Isaac Newton from here in Cambridge. And the idea here is that curved mirrors can have a lot of the same properties as lenses in the way that they will bend and bring light to a focus. And the advantage of using mirrors is, first of all, the light gets folded up. It gets bounced around between mirrors and a telescope. And so the telescope itself is a lot less cumbersome, a lot easier to move around. It doesn't have to be so long as with a refracting telescope. There is a problem with these telescopes that use lenses in that you can only make the lens so big before it starts to sag in the middle. If you think of it, you're holding it in place around the edges, and if you get something that's, say, appreciably more than about 40 inches across, the centre begins to deform under gravity and that distorts the image. So if you want to go bigger, you're really looking at using mirrors. They're much more reliable and they're much easier to make and transport. So the very largest telescopes we use today all use mirrors, and those mirrors are of the order of 8, even 10.5 metres across.
Well, that sounds enormous. How on earth do you make sure that a mirror that size is exactly the right shape? I would have thought it's so easy to go wrong and then ruin your entire telescope.
Well, of course, the prime example of that is the Hubble Space Telescope, where they did get the curvature of the mirror wrong, and there was a very big problem when it was first launched in space because all the images were out of focus. So you can imagine, usually we do test this quite thoroughly. There are also new and exciting experimental innovations which involve making mirrors out of segmented mirrors to mock up an even larger surface. So there are many advances in how you use mirrors as a reflecting surface. It doesn't just have to be one solid mirror.
But a lot of what we're looking at in space now is not, in fact, visible light. Mirrors and lenses are very good at collecting visible light, but how do we look at the things that we otherwise can't see, the X-rays and the microwave radiation?
Well, of course, we're only talking about the visible side of astronomy, and astronomy stretches right from gamma rays, X-rays, ultraviolet, down to radio and infrared. And radio signals are collected on massive parabolic dishes. People may have seen that in terms of Jodrell Bank or here in Cambridge, the radio dishes just outside of Cambridge on the Barton Road. There are special challenges when you want to take pictures in the UV because Earth's atmosphere blocks out the light, so that has to be done from orbit. And you get to really exciting challenges with X-ray astronomy because X-ray photons have so much energy in them that they would just slam into the surface of a conventional optical mirror. You can only bring them to a focus if you put the mirror almost edge on to the X-ray photons, and so it sort of ricochets off the mirror and it's brought to a focus that way. And so if you looked at an X-ray telescope, it would look nothing like the one Dave's got here. It would be like a set of nested cylinders collecting the photons and bringing them to a focus at the other end of the telescope. So there's a huge variety of ways that astronomers use telescopes to do their astronomy.
That was Cambridge University's Carolyn Crawford helping Ben and Dave out. I think they've got kind of a bit of case of telescope envy there, as she's shown them her big telescopes that put their magnifying lens contraption to shame. They will be back next week with more Kitchen Science, but until then, there's lots of great experiments you can try at home at thenakedscientist.com/kitchenscience. If you'd like to see some experiments in action, complete with some very posh voices, you can go to thenakedscientist.com/sporran. That's sporran, as in sporran, where you can see Dr. Other experimenting with whatever he can find in his sporran.